microphone's on? There we go. Okay, thank you. We're going to call the Tax Committee of April 7th to order. And I understand it was Representative Hornstein who was in the room first. So I don't know if he's still here. If not, we're going to see here. Where'd he go? Representative Hornstein, please join us. We're going to ask members of the committees to do their bills last since they serve on the committee. But Representative Hornstein, I guess, walked in first. So we're going to take up House Bill 3218 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. I also want to mention that Representative Severson, who's on the agenda, requested his bill be removed, so we won't be hearing that one today. Welcome, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, it's good to be back before your committee and presenting House File 3218. And what I wanted to do is just give you, rather than go through the bill, we'll have others do that, but I wanted to just give you a little broader context as to why I decided to introduce this bill and some of the practical impacts of it. This has to do with looking at tax increment financing as a tool for funding transit improvements. The case study in my district has to do with possible streetcar, and Minneapolis has a plan which you'll hear more about. But I first got this idea, Madam Chair, on a trip a number of us took to Portland, Oregon, and back in 2006. And what we saw there was a complete transformation of areas that were abandoned. There were really brownfields there, and no development and no economic activity whatsoever. And as part of a broader plan for redevelopment, entire new neighborhoods were created as a result of a streetcar line that went through those areas. And one of the ways that they financed it was through mechanisms that we're using in this bill. And so I came back from that experience very excited to see the possibilities. I think Portland and the Twin Cities are very similar demographically, population-wise, et cetera. And then a second thing happened, which was the Transportation Bill of 2008. And we worked closely with the Chamber of Commerce to include language in that bill to study different financing mechanisms, such as the one we have in here, in this bill, in terms of their potential to relieve some of the traditional public sector funding sources for transit development. It's known as the Value Capture Study. And so that study was completed and released publicly late last year. And there were a number of different financing tools that were reviewed in that study, and I think one that there was some broad consensus on across sectors was, again, this tax increment mechanism. And so we got to drafting House File 3218 with a number of stakeholders, and again, a broad coalition that one normally doesn't see coming together. We have the business community, the public sector, transit advocates, and you'll be hearing from them in terms of advocacy for this bill. So with that, Madam Chair, I would like to, I have four people that will give brief comments to the committee. The first is Mr. Jim Urkel, the transit advocate. He has a short overview of the bill, and we'll call on him to give you that part of the presentation.
Okay, welcome, and I want to let everyone know we have six bills to get through before we adjourn, so please welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jim Urkel. I'm an attorney with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, and I direct MCEA's Land Use and Transportation Program. I'll try and give you a very quick context for the bill and then talk a little bit about the bill specifically. I hope you have received a copy of the PowerPoint presentation. Basically, transit-oriented development is an integrated approach to both land use and transportation that takes advantage of the added accessibility that is provided by high-quality public transportation. Then it can support a rich mix of land of different uses of land, commercial, residential, and retail, It provides a number of benefits for both households themselves as well as for the region as a whole. It's a very complicated system or a process, though, particularly because in a lot of places, transit-oriented development is illegal as a matter of right in terms of land use regulations. So a lot of work has to happen in order to set the land use regulations to allow for transit-oriented development to move forward. But there are a number of financial aspects to transit-oriented development that also play out as well. On this sheet, with the bubbles, you can see how complicated the process can be of trying to stitch together or weave together all of the funding streams and as well as the other non-funding aspects of transit-oriented development to actually get a project done. I have an example of Fruitvale Village in East Oakland, California. It was built on a BART station about four stops and about 15 minutes away from downtown San Francisco. It was about $100 million in terms of its phase one build out, which really connected the BART station with the existing commercial core for the Latino community in East Oakland. On the second page of that part of the presentation on Fruitvale, you can see all of the different funding streams that needed to be stitched together in order to get the deal done, and one of those was transit-oriented development. And it was really used to pay for a lot of the gray infrastructure, the plaza in particular, which is now a really great meeting place for the neighborhood. The next couple of pages look at TIF-supported transit-oriented development around the country. And it's been used to support, again, great infrastructure, but over time it's also been used to support affordable housing, green space, park infrastructure, as well as economic mitigations such as small business storefront improvement loans and grants. So Mockingbird Station in Dallas is a very well-known transit-oriented development project around the country. They're getting ready to expand it right now. Dallas has just adopted a new expanded form of TIF where they're looking at providing more than 1.5 million square feet of additional retail, almost the same in terms of commercial and residential. With Mockingbird Station, you can kind of think of this as Eden Prairie on the Southwest LRT. It's that kind of setting. 16th in California in Denver, that was a historic preservation project where they took the Denver Dry Goods building. It used to be the largest department store west of Chicago, turned it into both commercial and residential, including affordable housing, and TIF was used to support the affordable housing aspects of it. You could think of something in downtown St. Paul as an analog to that. In Elmhurst, in Chicago, this was a complete redevelopment of their downtown business district. It's a suburb of Chicago. They built it around their metro station. It's been moving forward, and for this, you can kind of think of either Coon Rapids or Fridley on North Star. And in particular, they were using a lot of TIF money for storefront facade improvements, as well as loans and grants to support businesses in the area. Grossmont Trolley Station in San Diego, that one you can kind of think of as something that might end up out in, say, Woodbury if we ever fund something east of Union Station in downtown St. Paul. But it was used TIF was used specifically in that case to fund affordable housing. And in fact, California has a rule that 20% of all the proceeds from a TIF district must be used for affordable housing. So TIF has supported transit-oriented development around the country. A number of states have moved ahead because of the restrictions on existing TIF districts and what qualifies you to be able to use TIF in those districts is rather limited. A number of states have tried to figure out a way of getting around those girdles that kind of restrict TIF. A number of states have recently adopted specific legislation that established TIF districts for transit-oriented development. Pennsylvania in 2004 was the first. Texas, Maryland, and Maine have now moved forward. So that brings us to Minnesota. TIF has been used to support some of the transit-oriented development on Hiawatha, particularly at the Bloomington Central Station. It's also been used at the Fridley Station on North Star. What the bill would do is allow any city on a transitway corridor that's been identified by the Met Council to take advantage of tax increment financing. I would also allow cities to use money for the construction and operation of streetcars that would really act as circulators systems. They would be able to make use of a menu of options that they would decide on themselves based on the TIF plan that they would generate, but it would allow them to do all the things that are presently available under redevelopment districts, housing districts. It would also allow for, as I said, the streetcar construction operation, as well as the funding of social and economic mitigations that are identified as part of the planning processes that proceed with those transitway corridors, not unlike the Central Corridor Development Strategy that the City of St. Paul has adopted already.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Urkel. And Representative Hornstein, if we could get through all your testimony first before we go to committee questions on the bill.
Okay.
I think that's a better way to deal.
Just a few more, and they'll keep it short.
Thank you.
So next we have Peter Wagenius from the mayor's office. And while he's coming up, members, I just wanted to call your attention. I think we have in your packets, we have several resolutions. Minneapolis and St. Paul are supportive of this, as well as the Midtown Community Works, which is a business and public sector partnership near my district, and which includes people like Target, Alina, Wells Fargo, and the Midtown Greenway Coalition. And I think we also have support from the cities of Hopkins and Minnetonka. So, again, wide and deep support for this concept, and I'd like to welcome Peter Wagenius.
Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. In the past few months, there have been dramatic changes in federal transportation policies, which greatly increase Minnesota's likelihood of getting federal funding for modern streetcar projects. In January, Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood announced that they were eliminating the Cost Effectiveness Index as a pass-fail test for transit projects.
Yes.
Locally, the story about the impact of that was dominated by its impact on the Central Corridor and the fact that three new stations could be added back into the project. But across the nation, where there wasn't a local angle like that, like the Central Corridor impacts have been here, the story was different. They were paying attention to the fact that Secretary LaHood said that decision was made in large measure to move forward streetcar projects across the country. Local units of government across America are now racing to get in line for federal streetcar money. In February, four projects were approved for federal money through Tiger Grants for streetcar projects: Tucson, Arizona; Dallas, Texas; Portland, Oregon; and New Orleans, Louisiana. There's nothing about the projects in those four states that is in any way inherently superior to projects that could come from Minnesota from a standpoint of transportation or land use or economic development or jobs. There is nothing superior about those projects. The difference, the reason they are able to bring federal tax dollars back to their states, but we are not yet in a position to compete to bring federal transportation dollars back to Minnesota, is two reasons. A, they took streetcars seriously earlier, and B, they identified local funding streams like the one you have in front of you to fund the local portion of construction costs. That's the difference. We could do that too. They're doing it, and there's no reason Minnesota couldn't bring those dollars back to our state. Streetcar projects have a huge positive effect on jobs and economic development. I think other testifiers can speak more to that issue. Let me just conclude by saying new funding streams that do not directly compete with police, fire, streets, and streetlights are necessary to make streetcar projects a reality. When you look at how cities across the nation have built these projects, they were often led by cities and/or private sector developers. Certainly private sector developers in the case of Portland, which many people look to as the gold standard. they didn't compete with regional LRT projects, and they didn't compete with local funding for basic services. Otherwise, it'll never happen. This could make a huge difference in making this happen in Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Wagenius.
Thank you. And second to last testifier, Madam Chair, is David Frank from Schaefer Richardson. This is a developer, and you also want to call your attention to a letter addressed to myself and Senator Dibble. Senator Dibble is the Senate author from another real estate developer. Wanted to let the committee know that we have developers that support this and would utilize this, and I think that's really important, and we have one here.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein and members. It's the letter from Ms. Gregory in your packet. Mr. Frank,
Mr. Frank is from a different developer, so okay. We have two that are testifying on the record.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Frank.
Good morning, and thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm David Frank. As mentioned, I work for Schaefer Richardson Real Estate Company. We do urban real estate development and redevelopment projects, primarily in Minneapolis these days, also in St. Paul. We also have projects elsewhere in the metro area. I should also say, because it's worth noting this morning, I don't usually trumpet this, but I have experience working for the public sector, for the city of Portland, as the first streetcar line was put in. So if anyone wants anecdotal information on that, feel free to ask now or later. Just quickly, this morning, value capture means you need value to capture. And the private sector developers love streetcar lines, even more than light rail lines. Development loves streetcar development. Development loves streetcar lines and happens in a dense way around them. That's what drives the value, that creates the value to be captured. The reasons it's more beloved, if you will, than light rail, it's quieter as the train goes by. The streetscape tends to be far more enhanced than light rail. The construction is quicker. Just ask some of our Central Avenue businesses if that's a good thing. And it creates more of a sense of place. Developers love that. Developers can sell that. That's all to the good. So, speaking as a developer, and I'm sure there are others who would say the same if they were here today, developers will build density. So, put a streetcar line where density is wanted by a local jurisdiction. That will happen. That creates the value, which helps pay for the thing in the first place. This is a great idea, and I'm ready to answer any questions if you have them or not. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Frank. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. And finally, I have Commissioner Peter McLaughlin from Hennepin County, and he's also the chair of the county's Transit Improvement Board.
Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Hennepin County has been in favor of a judicious and targeted use of TIF over many years, and we continue to be in that position. We believe that the use of TIF and the creation of a unified application of TIF for transit-oriented development is a positive idea, a good idea. That setting the table, this is what we're talking about here, is trying to set the table with infrastructure investment, environmental cleanup, affordable housing, open space investments targeted that would then elicit private sector investment along these rail corridors. If you think about University Avenue, essentially it has not been redone since the streetcars left in the mid-50s. The construction of the Central Corridor will usher in a new era, a new definition for Central Corridor. The estimates that have been done along Central Corridor, Madam Chair and members, are that there's over $6 billion worth of construction investment that would take place if the local plans, and there are about 35 of them that have been developed along the Central Corridor, if those plans were implemented, there would be well over $6 billion worth of construction and all the jobs and investment that's attendant to that. Well over $4 billion of that is clear private investment. And then there are some that are shared investments between the public sector for affordable housing, for additional street infrastructure, access and the like. But there is the prospect here of thousands of jobs, billions of dollars worth of investment along this corridor. And so what we want to do is try to use this to take advantage of the $955 million in transit investment that's going to take place along that line and then elicit private sector investment to go with it. If I could just quickly, and I know you're in a hurry, there's a project in my district along Hiawatha Avenue. And just the issues that we're dealing with there to get that development to go forward as we try to get HUD mortgage insurance and get the have the investment occur. We have freight railroad tracks nearby. This is an old industrial corridor. Freight railroad tracks, pollution cleanup. We have high tension wires immediately adjacent. You have sidewalks that weren't improved as a part of the Hiawatha project, which are the feeder into the LRT stop, which is right across the street. And you have pedestrian crossing issues as well, just to name some of the issues for which a TIF structure could be used to provide finance. So, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Hornstein, is that everybody?
That is it. Thank
okay,
you,
so
Chair.
Now we probably have members, we'll have questions for the people who testified, and we do appreciate the board testifiers being here. Before we start the questions, though, I do want to ask Mr. Michael to give some context for committee members. You know, we've generally decided what to do on these TIF bills with a subset of the committee. I don't know if we want to do it that way or not, but I think this bill in particular is something that all members should think through a little bit. Most TIF bills we hear are individual projects who come forward and they want something locally, and they want to have some flexibility or some not having to follow the rules that's in current state law. And that's generally what most bills do. This bill is different. This is a new general purpose TIF idea. It's not for this city or this county. It's for the whole state if the state legislature would approve this new sort of general purpose TIF for transit, as I understand it. So I think before we start on questions, I'm just going to ask Mr. Michael for the committee to remind committee members what are all the current general purpose TIF provisions we have now. What are sort of the public purposes of these current general laws that we have? Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll try to quickly just go through a little thumbnail of the permitted types of districts and the sort of the purposes for which they're established. Sort of in the general category of blight correction or redevelopment, there are basically three types of districts. You have redevelopment districts, and in order to establish a redevelopment district, you have to meet a blight test. Secondly, there's a what is called a renewal and renovation district that also is sort of serves the same purpose, and there's a sort of a lower level blight test that applies. The difference between the two districts is that a redevelopment district has a 25-year duration, whereas a renewal district has a 15-year duration. The third sort of type of district in this general sort of purpose category is that you can establish a soils condition district for areas that have pollution and contamination, or within a redevelopment or a renewal district, you can establish what's called a hazardous substance sub-district, and that allows the sub-district allows you to actually write the value of the land down to zero and capture the taxes that is paid by the land and the existing value, unlike tax increment generally, which applies to the taxes paid by the increase in value. So there's sort of a set of three types of districts in one sub-district that are designed to sort of deal with redevelopment or renewal of areas that have existing structures on them but development problems. The second sort of major category is housing districts, which are intended to permit local governments to develop affordable and low-income housing, and those have 25-year duration. The third general category are economic development districts, and those are intended to just create economic activity in the local area, generate jobs, etc. They are limited. You can establish an economic development district anywhere. There's no sort of blight type test, but the restriction is that you can only use it for manufacturing, research and development, warehousing, and telemarketing. And the local government has to make findings that it believes that this will expand employment in the state before they do that. Before I stop, that's basically all I wanted to talk about. I thought it'd be useful to actually talk about what this bill does that's sort of different from the redevelopment context, because I think in many cases for this type of development, redevelopment districts are often used. The chair asked me about a project in her area that's at the end of the Hiawatha line and is obviously transit-oriented type development, and how did they do that without this authority? the answer was that they met the blight test for a redevelopment district, and so they were able to use a redevelopment district mm-hmm. there. The difference that this bill does is it doesn't require you to meet the blight test, so it would give the local government more flexibility in areas where there aren't enough parcels that either are occupied or have substandard buildings on them to use this to essentially encourage more dense transit-oriented development around the transit lines. The second thing that it does is it expands a little bit the authority of the local government to spend money on new kinds of things. In particular, it allows them to use money for circulator service, which would enhance the transit line, and for streetcar operating costs, which normally you can't use TIF for those kinds of operating costs. So that's a little bit of an expansion of the kinds of things you can spend tax increment on. So the two key things are you can do it without meeting the blight test, and secondly, there's a little bit of expanded authority to spend increment.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. And I think that helps members kind of think through what's really going on this bill, because we generally hear just a site-specific bill, and that's not what this bill is. So two questions then. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I'm now that Mr. Michael talked about operating costs, I'm just trying to figure out how that actually works. If you use a district for the purpose of, do you put it into a fund? How do you do the operating cost piece of that? And then I do have a question for Mr. Wagenius, so actually if he'd come back.
Mr. Michael, I think this is on the mechanics of how the bill works for funding it. We'll have Mr. Michael
shot. Madam Chair, Representative Broad, the bill doesn't actually specify sort of exactly the mechanics of how that would be done. In general, to the extent that the Development Authority collects increment, it would be a permitted purpose. It has to be, under general law, increment has to be put into a segregated fund. The Development Authority would be allowed, as one of the permitted uses of that fund, to provide, make payments related to operating costs. In general, I think that's probably not a big factor because, there's always a lag in tax increment, and you actually have to have this facility operating. So chances are this would be just something that they could use as a way to sort of backstop or supplement operating shortfalls that they otherwise have or might expect. But you're not going to get the increments until the district's been created for a while, and presumably the circulator service or the streetcar line would actually be operating before that happens. But I don't know, the advocates for the bill would probably
Thank
talk
you.
More coherently.
Thank you. And maybe I can get that down the road. It just seems to me that there might be some lack of transparency related to the operating costs of these facilities if you have it being paid out of an increment on one side and by various local government or partnerships on another. I guess I'd be concerned a little bit about lacking transparency in the true cost of the facilities. But my question for Mr. Wagenius is, I was interested in your statement about the cost-effectiveness standard being removed from the federal side by Secretary LaHood. I'm wondering if you can tell me a little bit more about that, and was that something that the Secretary just did, or was that a legislative action that was made by Congress? So I'm just more curious about what you mentioned.
Mr. Wagenius.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. The decision made was, let me be really specific, it was not to eliminate the CEI, it was to eliminate it as a pass-fail test. It still exists. It was implemented without legislative action, and it was without congressional action, and it was taken away without congressional action. It was created, I think, to manage the volume of requests that they were getting for transit dollars and to winnow it down. It wasn't congressional in nature. Or an origin.
Thank you. And then just to be clear, so the cost-effectiveness standard, cost-effectiveness standard is still considered in the awarding of the dollars and the projects. It's just not something that kicks people out of the process. Is that how it works?
That's Mr. exactly Williams. Right. It's still considered. It's still measured. It still matters. But other factors, which didn't used to matter nearly as much, have come to the fore. Economic development impact, job impact, these didn't matter nearly as much as they do today under this new action, this new decision.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, and I appreciate the description. I was very concerned that cost effectiveness would have been wiped out altogether. I think obviously it's incumbent upon us with dollars that are slim to go around to have projects that are cost effective that should be considered. So I appreciate that description. Thanks so much.
Madam Chair, if just
Mr. Wayne, yes?
On that point, the folks that we trust whose advice we get from D.C. have made a point of saying, don't think that this doesn't still need to work as a transportation project alone. The economic development impact is also a big deal, but this should not be considered a reason on behalf of any local government to pursue something that only pursues economic development goals. It has to work for transportation, and the feds won't consider it.
Some broad.
Thank you. And then just one additional question. Does that mean that congestion reduction, does that mean, are those the goals then, the transportation side of things?
In the past, it's been travel times have been the dominant consideration. But all of those factors are being considered now.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Representative Mallory.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Probably Mr. Michael, I would guess, probably can answer the question best. But I remember Representative Holberg, and it turned out later that former Representative, now Judge Abrams, admitted about a year later that it was his idea, offered something quite similar to this. It wasn't TIF, I think it was tax dollars, and it didn't include streetcar, but it included light rail and commuter rail. A lot like this. Can you remember how that differed from this?
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair.
You know, Minneapolis opposed that one. Now they support this, and I was kind of wondering how they differed.
Madam Chair, Representative Mallory, yes, there were proposals in the early part of the previous decade when there were issues about how to pay for the operating costs for the Hiawatha line, to establish a special taxing district around the Hiawatha line that wouldn't, there were a couple of variations on it, but that in one variation would have captured incremental taxes to pay for operating costs related to the line. And I think another variation on it would have had just imposed, you know, a special tax in that area to help supplement. And so, I mean, that was quite different from this proposal, which is largely to stimulate ancillary development with a little bit of authority to pay for some limited kinds of operating costs, whereas that was focused on ways to pay for operating costs by imposing or collecting incremental taxes from surrounding properties.
Representative Mallory.
I was just wondering what the difference was.
And Representative Mallory, I remember that well and fought that like crazy, too, because it did it to Bloomington, too. But that is a different bill. Representative Reinert, then Representative Garofalo. Representative Reinert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, a process comment. You asked a question about the TIF subgroup, and having been a part of that last year, I think it has real value, though. I think you're probably right in pointing out that this having statewide implications maybe should not go to the TIF subgroup, but to the full committee. Though I hope we'd use that subgroup for the other things we have on our agenda. My question, Representative Hornstein, and thank you, we sort of had a side conversation, but when this concept came forward last year, I can't recall who was shopping it around, but I wanted to make sure that there was language that covered passenger rail as well as light rail and commuter rail. So your thoughts on that? I don't see it here. We chatted briefly, but if this were to move forward.
Representative Hornstein, I think it was Representative Hortman's bill. Representative Hornstein.
Yeah, correct. Thank you.
I remember I posed that one,
yeah,
too.
Thank you. you're reminding me because I was going to say that this is new. Well, we just developed this bill this year, and it is different than Representative Hortman's bill. But I don't see a reason why we couldn't work together on a possible amendment that would look at that. I think that, you know, in your community you have the Northern Lights Express. There are going to be other passenger rail routes looking into the future. I don't think that those are quite as conducive to development, but there is certainly development that can take place around some of those stations, and I don't see a reason why we couldn't add that, but I would want to really work through some language, especially with the other stakeholders, but I don't see a problem with it. Just offhand.
Representative Reiner.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Horstein, I'm very willing to be a part of trying to figure out that language. You did note it. It's the stations that are on the end of those lines. And for any of us that are regional centers outside the metropolitan area, it's not going to be light rail. It's not going to be commuter rail. It's going to be passenger rail. So the Duluths, the Mankatos, the Rochesters of the world, as we get a rail plan in Minnesota, I just want to make sure we don't omit those as well.
Madam Chair, that's a good point.
Thank you. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Madam Chair and Representative Hornstein, actually piggybacking on Representative Mulray's comments, I had actually was opposed to that capturing of the revenue in the past as well. And for my district, the thinking is that the Cedar Avenue busway and transit corridor is going to be coming right into my district, where right now we're not talking about redevelopment. We're talking about taking farmland and converting it to development. And my concern, and my concern had always been that we were going to be looting future property tax wealth in my district and that I represent to go into this. That was my concern, as the state was capturing that, and I'm trying to figure out what has changed. I mean, it sounds like with this proposal, the concerns I had in the past would still be existent with this proposal.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, and I may ask either Mr. Urkel or Mr. Wagenius to comment further, but I think the bill that Representative Mulray is referring to was earlier this decade, and I do believe Representative Holberg was the author. Yep. And, the concerns with that, it was very, very narrowly focused, I believe, as was Mr. Michael alluded to. And this would probably, there in Section 5 of the bill, there's very, very clearly laid out what the uses would be. And so I think in terms of the property wealth, it will vary from municipality to municipality, but one would have to really look at, these, I think we have 8 specific uses, and I think looking at Farmington, I think some of them would really, you would have a net gain through some of these, and others, I'm not as well versed in terms of the difference in terms of developing a greenfield and what the, difference in revenue might be to the municipality. But I know Mr. Urkel thinks about this a lot and could probably provide some perspective as
okay,
well.
Okay, and we really have to finish this bill soon. Otherwise, we're going to have to reschedule other people's bills. Representative, or Mr. Urkel, and then Representative Garofalo, Mr. Urkel.
Madam Chair, Representative, the bill allows the cities to decide whether or not they want to set up the TIF district. It's entirely up to them. It provides a menu of options that they decide to pick from, and so they can design it in whatever way they wish. It can apply to, and as I tried to show in the presentation, a lot of different kinds of transit station areas. So all the way out into greenfields, it's possible to do, but it can apply to basically any station along any of the qualifying transit lines.
Representative Garofalo, okay, there's me on the list, and then Representative Solberg. I do want to get to these other bills, but I do want to take a minute to have members kind of just think about all the policy that's going on here, because we're not going to vote on this today. We're going to lay it over for possible inclusion like we're going to do with all of them. But, I just want to be clear for folks who are here on where I personally am at, and others have different views. But there's a number of issues for me in this legislation that I just want to have committee members start to think about before we decide if it should be in the omnibus tax bill. And I did oppose these past attempts pretty strongly. This bill is tighter, and I appreciate that. What I want to just put out there for people to just start thinking about this stuff. We have a lot of general purpose TIF. Mr. Michael walked through it. We've got lots of TIF. We got 2,200 districts, I think, in the state of Minnesota. This would obviously create a whole bunch more, and I have less concern about the purpose for a new general purpose than a whole bunch more property tax increases that are not transparent, and that's at its core the problem with TIF. So it's not about this bill. It's true about every TIF bill, I guess the way to think about tax increment financing for me is, like I said, it's not transparent. It's not on the property tax levy. Our residents, and all of our cities have TIF districts, don't see these property tax subsidies that are going to things. Secondly, if a city says, I want to do this, whether it's a future author on the agenda yet today, and their city says, let's do this TIF, or something in Representative Hornstein's belt, what's going on there? The city is getting a discounted new amenity paid for with the county tax base. Okay, so they're using their city tax base and the whole county's tax base to do something. So they've got a couple things that, you know, aren't the best way really to think to want to use property taxes for. You're having people pay for these things, and if you run a city, I mean, I used to be a Bloomington City Council member, and it's a great deal. You know, you have something you want to buy, you pass a TIF district, and you get to leverage all of Hennepin County's tax base to help you pay for this thing in your town. Okay, so that's why city councils love TIFs for anything, because there's a huge discount going on there. But the concern I have more relative to this bill is, you know, the argument of, for me, on, you know, should we be doing more things to basically subsidize private development as opposed to public development? Because a lot of this stuff around the line is private development. And I think, you know, that's the whole market debate this committee has all the time. Should we be, you know, making things, should we let the market work? Or should we give incentives to give subsidies for private development as it relates to TIF? So, as it relates to transit. So I think, you know, we just have to think about all this stuff. Another concern I have, which really isn't this committee, but I'll just put it out there, is to have the Met Council Transitway Corridor Group, which I know Commissioner McLaughlin is the president of right now, or I don't know if that's the correct title. So with nothing to do with him or the people who are sitting there, I mean, this is a non-elected body who would decide, you know, where these monies go. Now, Commissioner McLaughlin is elected. Maybe all the rest of them are elected. I don't know. But the testimony I heard is, you know, the only way you'd get this is if your line already shows up on the maps of this group that's making these maps. And I can tell you, someone who's tried to get a project on that map, I haven't been able to. So if we're only going to fund things that some other group is saying, this is on the list you can fund, you know, I have concerns about that as well. And then, and finally, I want to put out there that I'd be interested in working further on this if there could be some caps for the amount of tax base that could be used as it relates to this. So, you know, certainly a county like Hennepin has a massive net tax capacity compared to another county in the state. But some sort of caps where you're not just continually having all the municipalities approving these things and leveraging the county tax base, even if the county commissioners like that and they want to go along with it, Representative Hornstein, the residents of that county may not. And they have no ability to say, please stop approving all these TIF districts for transit. When, you know, we don't want that. And yes, they have elections, but, you know, if we're going to start a whole new thing, I think we have to think really long and hard about this would be for every county in the state. And I think we have to think about how we would construct this. So, Representative Hornstein, your reaction to just a number of issues there, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I really appreciate your going through those so specifically. And I think we can work on all of them. Your fourth one about the Met Council, I think I can alleviate that one just right away, because Commissioner McLaughlin's group is the county's Transit Improvement Board. And this was created in the transportation bill that was overridden in 2008 to collect the sales tax that's going, you know, for transit. And so this is separate of the Met Council.
Well, I want to be clear. Are they all elected, though?
Well, yes. They're county commissioners.
Okay, so they are all elected people who sit on. Okay, I'm looking at Commissioner McLaughlin.
Peter Bell is a member of it.
Okay. Okay.
And Madam Chair, and just,
good to know.
You know, I will continue to be promoting a much more accountable Met Council through election. I completely agree with your point, but on this particular case, it's the county's Transit Improvement Board. It is elected and accountable.
Okay.
And then I think on your fifth point about caps, I'd really like to work with you. I think that's a point well taken. And on all of them, I think we can work this out. There's nothing I think that you've mentioned that is not something that can be discussed, and to get your concerns out there so clearly is extremely helpful, and I appreciate that.
Thank you. Representative Solberg.
Just a couple of very quick things. I noticed on page 2, line 10, that you have the boundaries within a half mile. I want to know how that was established. Is that a walking distance? You don't have to answer it now, but it's a concern of mine. And the second thing is a concern, I think, that the expansion of for paying of operating costs from TIF districts would be a great expansion. I think that we have never done that type of thing, even though it may not ever happen. I think it's a little bit more difficult.
Thank you. Other questions or comments about this TIF bill? Okay, if not, we're going to, I actually have to move the bill. I'm going to move House File 3218 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. I want to thank you, Representative Hornstein, Mr. Urkel, Commissioner McLaughlin, Mr. Frank, and Mr. Wagenius for being here. We appreciate it, and looks like we have a little more work to do. We're going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Swales was the next author in the room when we started. And Representative Swales doesn't have nearly as broad encompassing of a bill. I think this is a landfall TIF. Representative Swales, and I'll move your bill, House File 3265, for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Representative Swales, how big is landfall? It's fairly small, right?
Yes, it is.
Representative Swales.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Landfall is a small community on I-94, just past 3M as you're going toward Wisconsin, and has about 300 manufactured homes. And they were just this past year named one of the most livable cities in the United States. So I'm very proud to represent that community. I have with me Mr. Kevin Schoberg, though, who will explain what the community is needing.
Welcome, Mr. Schoberg.
Madam Chair, thank you for having me. My name's Kevin Schoberg. I'm the city attorney for the city of Landfall Village. Mm-hmm. The bill that you have before you is a bill that essentially will solve a $653,000 problem. That problem occurred as a result of tax increment financing being done by the city back in 2001. And unfortunately, at the time, the city had advice from the lender and its own attorney that turned out to be wrong. Some of you probably saw the article in the Pioneer Press a few weeks ago, actually it was probably 6 weeks ago now, where it described that a district court judge had entered a judgment against the city of Landfall for $653,000. To give you a little bit of background of how important or how dramatic that is to the city, and to answer some of your questions, the city of Landfall consists of 800 residents approximately. There are three taxpayers in the city. All of you, I'm sure, have driven by it. It's the Harley-Davidson dealership, the Indian Motorcycle dealership. It's probably the only city in the state of Minnesota that has exclusively commercial property that's motorcycle operations. And there's 300 mobile homes that the city operates where we provide low-income and affordable housing for residents in Washington County. The significance of this is that the district court's ruling, which we have appealed to the Minnesota Court of Appeals, we think the court was wrong, but our position on all this has been, if we can correct this, we should do that. The bill that you have before you, I can correct everything that was done improperly at the time of the issuance of the bonds, except for one, and that's the pooling requirement. The statute right now allows a 5-year period. The bill before you allows an 8-year period, and that will allow us to correct the situation in Landfall. The reason that it's very important for us for this legislation to pass is quite simple. If you look at the tax revenue that's received by the city of Landfall, primarily we receive our tax money from the fiscal disparity. I mean, there's very, very little property within the city itself. The 300 mobile homes sit in a park. Those residents pay some personal property taxes, but primarily the city doesn't receive a great deal of tax revenue. The most important part of this is that, to give you kind of a comfort level for it, during the time that the original tax increment financing was put in place, all principal and interest payments were made by the person who received, in other words, the Harley-Davidson dealership. So there was never any problem about not being able to pay for this. The problem was is, when I took over as the city attorney in March of 2006, in September I received a call from the lender indicating that the tax increment financing had come due, which, as you know, it doesn't really come due. You normally pay it off over the term of the tax increment financing. Immediately they identified to us that it was their opinion that the documents had not been properly drafted, and after hiring our own bond counsel, which we hired the firm of Kennedy and Graven to review it for us, this bill was drafted by Steve Bubel based on my request to them that I wanted to put something before the legislature that would correct the problem. And so that's the bill that you have before you, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
Okay, thank you. I think this one seems pretty straightforward. We've done a lot of these in the past. I won't commit the committee, obviously, to anything, but questions from members on this one in particular? If not, we're going to lay your bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you for joining us today, and thank you, Representative Swales.
And, Madam Chair, just so you know, I think I'm on my way to United Hospital to greet my second grandchild right
now. Oh, congratulations in advance. Nice. Okay, we're going to take Representative Dietrich because one of her testifiers needs to leave, and we are going to get through all these bills by noon, members. So Representative Dietrich moves her own bill. Representative Dietrich moves House File 3007 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I bring House File 3007 to you on behalf of the City of Coon Rapids to request the extension of 9 TIF districts until December 2025. As you recall, we were here last year with a slightly different proposal. You asked us to simplify a little, and we have done that. Before we get to the logistics of the project, though, I would like to just provide a little bit of information from my own perspective on why this is an important project. This project is the revitalization of Coon Rapids Boulevard, which some of us who grew up in that area remember as the old Highway 10. 50 years ago, that corridor defined Coon Rapids as it became the home for a highly valued Anoka Ramsey Community College and Mercy Hospital, and much more commercial development. In fact, it was the home of one of the first targets in the metro area. This corridor was a source of pride and opportunity for a young and growing community. However, since the construction of the new Highway 10 freeway, State Highway 10, many of these commercial interests have moved north, resulting in a deteriorated boulevard, vacant buildings, declining values in existing buildings, the traffic load is over capacity, and sidewalks and trails are fragmented and old and in very poor condition. All of these factors combine together to create a 7-mile boulevard with safety and crime issues, traffic congestion, vehicular and pedestrian accidents. Honestly, it has deteriorated into an eyesore and an embarrassment to the community. Currently, there are no resources to address this corridor. It is crucial to revitalize the corridor, and we are asking for TIF flexibility in order to do that. Thank you, Madam Chair. And right now, I would like to call on Mayor Tim Howe, the Mayor of Coon Rapids.
Welcome, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Madam Chair and committee members, on behalf of the citizens of Coon Rapids and the business owners in Coon Rapids, and specifically along Coon Rapids Boulevard, I'm here to ask you to help us for our city's future and the future of the boulevard. Since the 80s, even before my time, as they say, on the council, we had committees, ad hoc committees, five or six of them, I think, total, that have looked at the boulevard. As we've heard from the residents, especially out there knocking on doors, that we needed to do something. We have worked toward those goals, and we have what we think is a good plan in place, which includes four ports along the boulevard. One, Port Wellness, which is around Mercy Hospital, Port Campus Square, which is around Anoka Ramsey Community College, Port Riverwalk, which is in the old shopping center area, and Port Evergreen, which is in our industrial park. But in order to move forward with that, we believe that we need to take care of the infrastructure of Coon Rapids Boulevard itself. As a community and as a council, we've worked forward to put together properties for future development of business. And now we're looking also at the possibility of using this to tie in with North Star and the transit and make this a transit corridor in the future, both at the Riverdale stop, the Fridley stop, which is just to the south, and the future, which we believe will be the Foley stop in the North Star commuter rail system. The road has been done over by the county, but already 3-4 years later on the northern half, which they did heading into the city of Anoka, it is already deteriorated where it's almost undrivable already. And they'll continue to do this as long as they have to, But if we go toward federal funding and the county, which this is a county road, if they do this work, they said that the earliest would be 2018. I don't know how our boulevard can survive till 2018. We're asking for your help. This is an unusual thing in that these districts, we did things a little differently back as a city. We had small TIF districts rather than one or two or three large ones. And so this is a combination of nine small districts, which will help us move forward with this project and the revitalization of this boulevard for jobs in the future. With us is today I have Earl Beitzel from Mercy Hospital and also Mary Jacobson from Anoka Ramsey Community College. And Earl?
Please, yes, join us. And Mr. Beitzel, did you, is it Beitzel? Is that how you pronounce it? Please.
Thank you.
We can pull a chair over here.
Okay.
Got to get into the microphone there. Okay. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I represent Mercy Hospital, and as was mentioned, we're a major employer in Coon Rapids. We employ somewhat over 2,400 employees. We have 900 affiliated physicians, and then this is one of my favorite parts. We've got about 400 youth and adult volunteers who participate around Mercy, so there's a lot of activity, and a vibrant Coon Rapids Boulevard is very important to us, and we're very supportive of getting the improvements that have been mentioned. There's a lot of activity that occurs around Mercy. We have a major clinic called the Alina Medical Clinic down at the southern end of Coon Rapids Boulevard. We also have 56,000 annual emergency department visits. There's a lot going on, and we also have a need for close proximity of lodging and dining because a lot of our patients and their families will come in some cases from distances that require local amenities, and right now we're feeling a pinch from lack of that. Also, we're very excited about the North Star and have been talking with the community college about collaborating on some type of transit to come back and forth between some of the hub stations of the North Star over to Mercy. So I'd just like to emphasize we think this project is very important and would be a major help to Mercy Hospital.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you. I'd like to turn it over to Mary Jacobson from the community college. Thank you.
All right. Welcome, Ms. Jacobson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and representatives. I'm Mary Jacobson with Anoka Ramsey Community College, and we have campuses in Cambridge, Minnesota, and in Coon Rapids, Minnesota. I am also a 20-year resident of Coon Rapids, so I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you about this potential project. On behalf of Anoka Ramsey, I'm here to strongly support this bill because it has a direct impact on our college. It's really the front door of our Coon Rapids campus. It's where our students cross, where our employees come and go, and it's also the welcoming piece for the community to come to our campus. We have more than 7,000 students at that campus that are coming and going, and this rundown, underdeveloped area is a problem for us. It's a problem for us as we're talking with prospects, trying to get them to cross over, believe us that it's really nice once you get past all of this. We try to show, photographs on our website so that they actually believe that there is a river back here and it's a very beautiful campus. And we take pride in keeping our campuses and our grounds, our facilities well kept so that it's an area that's conducive to learning. And this area that they have to cross over or be a part of is really problematic for us right now. If you consider this bill and it does get passed, this would make such a strong impact on our students. For example, there would be more jobs right next to the campus for them, close proximity for them to, shop, have lunch. It's going to change the student life aspect of the campus. We also do have a shuttle running to the North Star Rail Station at the Riverdale stop already, bringing in students from you know, the Big Lake line, and also our employees are using that line. So there's already a tie to the campus from the North Star Rail. And there's also some talk about potentially having a rail line coming from the Cambridge area down into Coon Rapids. So there's going to be more connections there as well. So we encourage you to support this bill to revitalize the area. This is our college's front door, and we believe that it will attract businesses that serve the college and our students well. So thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobson. Welcome. Do you want to add something, I assume?
I'm the cleanup hitter. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Matt Fulton. I'm the city manager in Coon Rapids. And I intentionally went last in case there were any questions about this bill, because I probably would be best able to respond to some of them. This is one piece of a very multifaceted project, and I'm only going to focus on the infrastructure element. Coon Rapids is at kind of a critical stage in its development. As Representative Dietrich talked about how prominent the boulevard was in Coon Rapids' early days, but Coon Rapids is now fully developed. As a community, we're struggling on how to deal with public service delivery, with an aging infrastructure, with an aging population, and how to keep current with all of those demands for public services. Our opportunity for new property tax wealth, private property tax wealth, is really along the boulevard. But that demands that you have a private investment environment that can accommodate the needs of those folks who are going to be willing to invest in private development along the boulevard. The boulevard reconstruction itself is a public project that really is allowed under current law for these tax increment districts. The request in front of you is really just to allow for the extension of those districts so that we can help create that environment for future private development. We've done an analysis of all of those underutilized and unutilized parcels that really demonstrates that you could actually have over 5,000 new jobs created over the course of time along the boulevard. As the mayor pointed out a little bit earlier, this is a county boulevard. The county actually acted on this motion or this issue at their board meeting last week or within the last couple weeks. The counties historically have been always opposed to anything relating to doing anything new with tax increment. They actually have gone on record to not being opposed to this effort because they recognize the benefit that this provides to the community. When Coon Rapids Boulevard is redeveloped, what will end up happening is it'll be in the port areas, and it will be a mixed-use kind of development. If the county used its normal course, in addition to just taking forever to get through those federal funding processes, one of the elements that we're going to be confronted with is sound wall barriers, because along the corridor there are certain areas that are not in compliance with current sound wall requirements. And so the federal government or the federal funding process looks to alternatives to mitigating those sound issues, and sound walls is their preferred source, or their preferred solution. So if we went through the normal route, in addition to it being about a decade away, we'd probably find sound walls up and down that corridor. That goes directly counter to what the community is trying to do in terms of generating new growth, both residentially and commercially. And so this bill provides the opportunity for us to consider using local funds that could be used directly for this public project in order to support the private investment needs and future private redevelopment along that 7-mile stretch.
Thank you. Other questions for Mr. Fulton? Manager Fulton? Okay, if not, I want to thank everybody who came, and that is Mayor Howe and Mr. Betzel and Ms. Jacobson and City Manager Fulton. And thank you, Representative Dietrich, and we will lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you, committee members.
Thank you. Now we're going to go to Representative Drazkowski. And Representative Drazkowski, we're just hearing the TIF portion of your bill. You know that, right? Okay, so would someone like to move? Oh, I don't have the number.
3316.
I'll move House Bill 3316 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill, and this is the TIF part of the bill. Welcome, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair members. Back in 2007, St. Charles is the largest town in my district. It's 3,600 people. In 2007, it was one of the towns to go through the August flood. And then in April of last year, right towards the very end of session, we had a situation where the largest employer in the town, North Star Foods, an employer of about 240 people, burned to the ground. And we've been bringing forward a couple of efforts to try to do what we can to, in the current budget environment that we're in, realizing the track record that the legislature has for helping towns where major employers burn down, tornadoes, etc., trying to find ways that we can help St. Charles. This bill actually was written in the Senate by Senator Murphy, as him and I are working together on these initiatives. And the TIF portion is basically a waiving of some of those limitations that Mr. Michael talked about earlier in 469.176 to create more flexibility and give more flexibility to the city as they work on developing a business park about a mile south of their town, which I do understand they've got some of the infrastructure already laid out that they've laid out there in past years. So they're currently in the middle of planning for that business park south of town, and this would give them more flexibility within the use of TIF.
Thank you. Questions for Representative Drazkowski? Is there anyone who wanted to speak on the bill? Appreciate your patience. Ms. Bergman was taking notes on who came in the room and what order, and we've been trying to cycle through. And if there are no other questions, we're going to lay your bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you all.
Representative Depke. Welcome. And we still have Representative Abler after this, and we'll get you in. He talked to me on the floor a few days ago, but Representative Defke's had a bill that's come and gone and come and gone, and it's back. So it's been kind of an interesting year on this one. But Representative Defke, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. I have with me today both the mayor of Wayzata and the project manager for Presbyterian Homes. This is a project that the Wayzata and Presbyterian Homes has been working on for many years, and I'm going to step back and let them tell you about the project. It's a bill, in essence, relating to the city of Wayzata and extending time for certain activities in the tax increment financing district. So I will now turn it over to Mayor Ken Wilcox.
Mayor Wilcox, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. I'm Ken Wilcox, Mayor of the City of Wayzata, and we're here to talk to you about a major project for Wayzata. It's called our Bay Center Shopping Center and Mixed-Use Complex. The developer is Presbyterian Homes, and the heart of the project is a senior living facility. As Representative Depke said, we've been working on this probably for 10 years, and the reason is that it is such a huge part of Wayzata and such a huge potential economic engine for the city. We've been losing retail for quite some time. We've been looking to this project to revitalize the whole heart and soul of the economy of Wayzata. We are here today mostly because of the economy, which has stalled us in this project, and we're looking for some help to try to get this thing moving again. As I said, this project will be primarily senior living. It'll be condos, retail, a hotel, right in the heart of Wayzata. It is, without question, the largest, most significant project the city of Wayzata has ever taken on. And it's stalled because of financing, and we think with some tweaks in the TIF situation, we can get this thing moving. It's all ready to go. I mean, we've given approvals. Last night at the council meeting, we gave final approval to the first part of the project, which would be the senior living component. That was final approval for the design. It's ready to go if we can just get the financing in place and move it forward. What we're asking for is, the adjustments we're asking for all deal with the delays that have occurred because of the economy. The The first element, which delays the receipt of TIF, reflects the fact that this will not be up and running soon enough. It is the total amount of TIF is capped, but because of the delay, the way it calculates, we need to give them some flexibility in order to be able to reach the total amount that we've authorized. The other timing issues have to deal really with protecting the city in case for some reason this project weren't to go forward, to give us additional time to come up with a plan B, another developer perhaps that could in fact execute the plan in that area. It was a blighted area. It's important that we get this thing moving. It's ready to move. We can put people to work and revitalize our economy. So that's why we're here.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Welcome. Did you want to add?
John Merkins with Presbyterian Homes. We represent the master developer of the project. As Mr. Wilcox indicated, we've been working on this for some time and actually represent the third development plan for this site. It is a particularly challenging site for a number of reasons, not only the blight conditions and the challenges of that, but soil conditions are extremely difficult on this particular site, and that was one of the primary reasons for TIF being applied to the project to make it possible. Our primary challenge in the delay is that when the TIF district was established, it basically started the clock for first receipt, and with project delays, it has created a lesser amount of value over the course of the entire life of the TIF, because first receipt will come before most of the improvements are completed. So that's the primary driver from an economic perspective to make this more attractive to the capital markets for us.
Questions? Rep. Semkols, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure who this question should be directed to, but I understand, I think, what you're trying to do here, and I don't have a significant issue, other than I want to understand a little bit better the what the summary refers to as basically a deeming that we've met the blight test. If are we kind of going around some of the eminent domain changes that we made a few years back, and if so, why? And help me understand that a little bit more. Maybe Mr. Michael looks like he's able to and willing.
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Coles, basically, as I understand the circumstances here, the city established this district and did some demolition, and so the district met the blight standards when it was established. What the third clause of the bill does is give them the option of saying, look, we're going to decertify that district and create a new district, and obviously because they've removed the blight already, if they want to create a new district, they could not meet the blight test. And so what the bill says is we will be able to meet the blight test based on the conditions that existed when we created the original district. The general law has some flexibility to do that, but the time limits are much tighter, and they couldn't meet the time limits under the general law.
Okay. Rep. Semkols.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Michael. That's helpful. Mr. Mayor or Representative Detke, where exactly is this?
Where's the site?
Where's the site?
It's right on Lake Street, right on our main street on the east end of town, just as you get, I don't know how well you know, Sunsets and yep. Some of that area, just to the east of that. It's a it's about a 15-acre property, and it used to be a marsh,
I don't think so.
Which is why we got soil problems. That you can't find terra firma, so it just goes way down. But anyway, that's where it is. It's on the east end of Wayzata.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
And Rep. Semkols, while you're at it, can I take your motion for House File 3715 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill? I don't think we've moved it yet.
That's my motion.
Okay, so now it's before us. Other questions for Rep. Depke or the Mayor or Mr. Merkins? Okay, if not, we're going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill, and I know a lot of cities are in your situation where the economy has just sort of left everyone hanging, so we'll take a look. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the committee, too.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Representative Abler, I'm going to move your House File XXX. And someday we will have a number for that. But we did want to Representative Abler talk to me about this briefly, and he's introduced the bill, but we don't have the number yet. So we're going to move Representative Abler's House Bill XXXX, Reviser Number 10-6248 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Tax Bill. And then I'll also, for Representative Abler, then move the Author's Amendment. Would you like that, Representative Abler? I guess we have a couple. Or is this it? Did you want the Author's Amendment
please,
added?
If you would, that
okay,
would
so I'll move, members, it's in your packet, the JM-A02 Amendment to House File 4X's Reviser Number 10-6248 to get the bill in the order the author would like it. Discussion to the amendment. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries. Representative Abler, welcome.
Madam Chair, thank you. And I appreciate you getting us on the schedule with such short notice. And the bill is introduced today.
Right.
And so it won't be that XXX bill anymore. But so this is, even though the language is new, this is a 10-year-old project. The city of Ramsey has made an effort to have a plan development. Ramsey was a bedroom community, once a township, and as it grows up along Highway 10, it made a huge effort and invested a bunch of its own money and others in attempting to create a town center. It was going pretty well until the economy tanked, the developer died, went bankrupt, and some of the bankers went to jail. Except for that, it's gone well. The city has dipped into, it was in the paper, the city dipped into its reserve to actually redeem the land at a wash sale price, and is now coming, has spent a huge amount of effort internally to develop the proposal you see in front of you. And the I have, knowing time was short, the city administrator is going to give the overview. But I think of all the proposals that you hear about, this one truly passes the but-for test. There are developers in hand looking for the infrastructure this bill will develop. And with that, I'll turn to my witness. And there's a couple city council members here who can take questions. And
great.
Thank you, Madam.
Welcome, and thank you for waiting. Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kurt Ulrich. I'm the Ramsey City Administrator. And with me today, I have council member and EDA members, Matt Look, to my left, and council member and EDA member, David Elvig. We're here today to ask your acceptance and support of a tax increment financing bill for the Ramsey Town Center. We've been planning this project for approximately 10 years, and it was designed, the Ramsey Town Center project was designed specifically as a commuter rail station, and with that in mind, so that it's a new town development which would develop as a result of a transit-oriented community. The city purchased it in June of 2009, and during our planning sessions after the purchase, we determined that a vehicle, a tool, such as tax increment financing would be the best option for us to move forward with this type of development because it is mixed use. It involves residential as well as commercial and office development. We have strategically aligned our efforts of the town center with Metropolitan Council policies, with the livable communities, land use and systems management, and multimodal transit options to make sure that this development works together. And so it's a new type of development that needs a new type of financing to move it forward. There are a number of major infrastructure improvements, including parking ramps, as well as a major interchange, and the, along with the transit station. Currently, there's been an investment of federal and state money into the parking ramp, which exists on the site, which is ready and available for the transit station upon its development. Commercial development is expected to generate approximately $3.5 million annually at full build-out to the local tax base and provide 3,900 new jobs at the site. Approximately 600 new residential units would be constructed as well. The tax increment financing district would allow a portion of those revenues to be devoted back to the construction of the station as well as the transportation improvements. There's potential to generate approximately $68 million, which would be used for these improvements over the 25 years, leveraging a catalyst of $360 million in private investment on the other side of the equation. City is very cognizant of its tax increment districts. There are three that will be coming up for decertification in 2012, which we intend to do, which are in our industrial areas. We also have two housing districts existing within the present boundaries of the tax increment district proposed, which are intended to be decertified with this the larger tax increment district proposed with this legislation. It also would construct a pedestrian overpass over Highway 10 connecting the rail station to a regional park as well as residential areas and regional trail systems to the south of town center. It's an important safety aspect to us because it would be used to construct the interchange at Armstrong Boulevard, which is in close proximity to a railroad track and serves as a boundary or barrier between our public safety response of police and fire in our existing residential districts. So without tax increment financing, we feel it would be 20 years before that interchange is built with traditional financing methods through state bonding or federal appropriations. We modeled our proposed legislation on the City of Fridley's tax increment financing district and hope to capture the same types of increments coming off this project, but on a larger scale in terms of the entire area, which is potentially would be developed and which would be incentivized because of the investment in public infrastructure in the interchange as well as the rail station. So creation of a new tax increment district, in summary, would create something that it will be a valuable tool for us to move forward with this. It is virtually the only means by which, and given the present-day economy, in the absence of other sources, would give us enough leverage to generate local tax revenue to go towards public infrastructure of a significant nature. We have an opportunity here to influence the local economy and to develop an economic vitality in this area, and but for an expanded and new tax increment district, this project will not be successful. So we would encourage your support of this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Manager Ulrich. And did Councilmember Look or Councilmember Elvig want to, or Elvidge, I'm not sure I got the names right. Sorry about that.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. We just want to encourage your support on this. Again, as the city acquired this property, we are now the developer of the property, and generally developers will pay for these type of infrastructural investments, and so we're looking for that tool to try and accomplish that. We would appreciate your support.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Councilmember Look and I also sit on the Finance Committee and the EDA, and something that's very important to us is the financial health and welfare of the city. The city has been growing internally quite well, and we just got a triple or double A plus bonding, which is as high as we can go. So we're fiscally very responsible, and decertification and not over tiffing the entire region is real important to us. I think that's something noteworthy for you.
That is noteworthy.
And Madam Chair, just to walk you through the packet that's in front of you, there's the first one is kind of the testimony you heard. Page two is just a where the heck is Ramsey anyway on the map. And it's a there's a county named after it, too, which some people confuse it, but Ramsey is a really good place to raise your kids. On the third page is a sketch of the site. And if you see the blue line on the west end of it there, last year we were able to get design build authority for the county, Anoka County, to build an overpass at Armstrong. And so that's part of this effort they're working on. There's a hope they can get a North Star station in the middle there. And then the last page is a map, and as I'm told by staff, that the orange are developer agreements pending, that this will help to go forward. And so this is this TIF proposal actually puts some people to work, and I think that but for this help, I don't know if those agreements can go forward. So we'll stand for questions.
Thank you. And I think Representative Carlson has a question.
Sure. I was interested in getting some more information about this overpass. And exactly, I didn't happen to get one of the maps.
Oh, right here.
But at any rate, is it over State Highway?
Highway 10.
You hand that to Lynn.
Well, at any rate, my question, that answer to the question was over. Would there be some costs incurred by the Minnesota Department of Transportation? And Madam Chair, the reason I raised the question, it was 3 years ago when I served with you on a conference committee, we had a lot of discussion about an interchange over Highway 94 up near Rogers.
Yeah.
And we found out that there was going to be a major cost incurred by MDOT as a result of the exit ramps and so on. So that's essentially my question, and what is the position of the Minnesota Department of Transportation if there are going to be exit ramps built at state expense?
Representative Adler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Carlson. The that bill was actually finally passed in February, allowing design build. The position of the city is that they're not looking for state money, and if they would look for it, they wouldn't have got a bill. And so if they can get federal money or local monies, county monies, to do that overpass, it's ahead of the schedule for Highway 10 as it's expanding up toward, they just have a third lane in Highway 10 to Hanson is as far as it's gotten. They're hoping to get some other third lane activity further on and then widen through Anoka and get rid of the Fair Oak-Thurston interchange, which is a $100 million project. But this is, MnDOT went through this, and they're comfortable with this proposal. This bill is not about an overpass. This is just about the TIF district surrounding that. The overpass is on the map to point out the city's effort in trying to look at this as a global project.
Okay.
But there's no state money.
Carlson is, it's a, I think it was Representative Pepin's bill. Representative Carlson.
An interchange that you'd be building with TIF money.
But not this. But not this TIF money, I don't think.
Okay, so Representative Adler or Mr. Ulrich, so is the TIF money that is being proposed in this bill used at all to construct an overpass?
Madam Chair, the answer to that question is yes. It was intended to be one of those public improvements.
But not state money.
I think we'll need more information. Representative Carlson is referencing a bill that what we heard from MnDOT, not your city, somewhere else, is that cost. If we had passed it, it created a big cost for MnDOT because they would have to create all the ramps surrounding the project. So I think Representative Carlson's just trying to get some clarity. Representative Carlson?
The exit ramps that MnDOT, yeah. It was pretty big bucks. If I remember.
It was. It was the Brockton Exchange, I believe.
To construct, because the exit ramps have to go back, some of you know better than I, how many feet or whatever, but a quarter of a mile or whatever it happens to be to the exit. And so the question was, is there going to be a cost? We can check on that.
Yeah. Representative Adler.
Madam Chair, I misspoke about the TIF part, but there's no state money devoted to that overpass. That was a clear understanding when we were in this very room and swore on the Bible, pretty much, that we weren't going to be seeking state money and that state's not.
Representative Carlson, I don't. Yeah, he's not talking about that. Right.
About, you know, when you're driving up the highway and you turn over an extra lane to exit. When you
they're not.
That's where the one on up in Rogers. Oh. There was a lot of cost for that exit lane, not the overpass, and that's where the debate came in.
Right. Please,
Chair,
yes.
Could, Representative Carlson, right now the proposal has $5 million in it from the city of Ramsey and $45 million from the county of Anoka to build the overpass as it's proposed as a $50 million project.
And I think Representative Adler can get us this information for further. We're just going to lay it over. I do want to say that Representative Adler and I think Representative Dietrich's bills would probably be solved if Representative Hornstein's bill passed. Because I think if you're within his bill was if you're within a half a mile of a line, you could do all these things. And looking at your map, I think your two areas are in the Representative Hornstein bill. But we appreciate you being here. Thank you really for coming. Appreciate it very much. And we are adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you. Made it over.